Dharma Talk was given by Lawrence Greco at the Interdependence Project in New York City. For more information, please visit www.openskyzen.com.
There's a quote that I think describes these practices surprisingly well. And you might be surprised at who once said this. A human being is part of the whole, called by us universe, a part limited in time and space. He experiences himself, his thoughts and feelings, as something separated from the rest, a kind of optical delusion of his consciousness. This delusion is a kind of prison for us, restricting us to our personal desires and affection for a few persons nearest us. Our task must be to free ourselves from this prison by widening our circle of compassion to embrace all living creatures and the whole nature in its beauty. Nobody is able to achieve this completely, but striving for such achievement is, in itself, a part of the liberation and the foundation for inner security. What kind of spiritual master said that? You heard that? You heard it before, or are you guessing?
Yes.
Shilpa? Huh? You're right, it's Albert Einstein. Shilpa got it. Oh, no wonder, okay. So he was a scientist, and he figured this out. But there's nothing really metaphysical about these practices. There's nothing we need to believe in, or have faith in, or trust. These are things we do. Being Buddhist, and whether you're Buddhist or not, really doesn't matter at all. This is something we do. It's not something we believe in or pay lip service to. So simply defined, loving kindness is the desire for others to be happy and to not suffer. Now, it sounds simple enough, but yet sometimes we feel stingy. I would say the great equalizer for all of humanity is that we all want the same two things. We all want to be happy, and we all want not to suffer. Does anyone disagree with that? So even when you look at some people, and certain people always come to mind, but what about blank? Even people who act horribly, who cause great harm, a few people or to masses of people, they're actually doing what they're doing in the hopes that they'll get some relief, they won't suffer anymore, and that doing what they think is the right thing to do at that moment is going to somehow make them happy, even if it's awful, even if it's misguided. So that helps me when I have a hard time understanding someone's hurtful behavior. So what these practices do is help us to be less self-absorbed and to dissolve these boundaries we put around ourselves. So a few of you mentioned heartache, being heartbroken. I think just under a year ago, I had my heart broken worse than it had ever been broken before. And it was really one of the best things that ever happened to me. So I was in this little bubble, my little shielded view of love. And I thought I had it all down, and I was teaching here and talking about loving kindness and compassion. And I could talk about it very well. But it took having my heart broken open like that to understand more deeply what loving kindness really means. So I know, as painful as we've all had, really, some rotten times. At least two of you are going through that as we speak. But we can't let any of it go to waste. So this heartache we feel, as difficult as it is, as painful as it is, as much as we want to make it go away, there's really something wonderful to be learned from it. So we don't want to wallow in it to death, but we don't want to pretend it's not there and try to medicate it and make it go away as soon as possible, but to just really gently hang out with it and touch it, because that right there teaches you a lot about loving kindness, more than any of my words can. And we're trying to describe some undescribable things here. Loving kindness, compassion. Like talking about swimming without swimming. We have to do both. The way we usually look at love in this world, as I see it, you ever seen, I don't know if this is still done in game shows, where they'll put a contestant in what looks like a little old-fashioned glass enclosed phone booth, and they shut the door, and there's a lot of $100 bills waiting to be blown around, and they tell the contestant, all right, you've got 60 seconds to grab as many bills as you can and stuff them in your pockets, and then that's what you win. That's what you get. So they turn the wind-blowing machine on, and you see the person frantically grabbing for all these bills and stuffing them in their pockets. And that really sums up the mistaken view we have of love or compassion. As if there's a finite amount of love in this world. So I had better reserve it for, like Albert Einstein said, reserve it for those nearest me. For those closest to me, or for those who could do the most for me. Because that's how we also see love, as some form of currency. Well, I did this for you. Why aren't you saying thank you? Why aren't you doing something in return now? Or we just think, if I love too much, I'm going to get hurt. Or look what happened, I did open my heart, and now I'm crushed. But the nature of love is to simply love. It's not something we have to regulate. And then clarity and wisdom also, of course, have some say here, so we don't want to indulge in codependency. That's a whole different matter. So loving kindness is the first of four, what we call, what the Buddha called the Brahmaviharas, or the four immeasurables. And my favorite way, or my favorite name for them, is the four abodes. Because they're four natural qualities of mind in which we could feel at home. So these two we're dealing with this weekend, loving kindness and compassion. These are not qualities we're trying to attain or learn and assimilate into our hearts. They're qualities that are already there. These are qualities that are natural to our minds, even though we don't feel like it sometimes. Or we think we're stingy, or we think we're not so compassionate, or we think we're so selfish. It's just that those qualities get obscured from conditioning, habit. So we awaken them through these practices, which initially I really hated. I really couldn't stand loving kindness practice. I thought it was just hokey and corny, and in Zen it's really mostly about you just sit. Right? That's all you need to do is just sit. Don't talk so much. There's no visualizing and just thinking about love pouring from your heart to people you don't know. Well, I love the checkout person at the grocery store, or whatever his or her name is, or whatever. But really, when I did it, and some of you will feel this way at certain points tomorrow, and that's perfectly fine. Just as like if you ever started a new exercise program, like yoga or weight training or anything new, and at first your muscles are a little wobbly through the process, or it feels like I can't do a headstand, or I can't lift that weight, or whatever you do. The same with this. So the capacity's there. We all have these qualities already, but we're just kind of waking them up. We're reminding ourselves that they're there, and we're creating new habit energy, which in turn is really all karma is habit. Some of us are habitually stingy with love, or we're tight with compassion. And we're just training ourselves differently to remind ourselves of what we're capable of. So I think the most important thing to remember in terms of loving kindness is its unobstructed quality. So it's just as it's the nature of the sun to shine, the nature of love is simply to just love without picking or choosing, without considering the pros and cons, without being resentful afterwards, just saying, oh, I wasted my time. What a waste of time that was. That's what I did a lot of last year. It's 5 years of my life I wasted. And my heart was broken. I felt like, oh, I wasted 5 years. I went through that little trip, that little story. But now I know I didn't waste anything. And it's not like, you know, all the love was used up and now I'm all out of love now. No. Wasn't that an old song from the 70s? I just thought of that. I'm all out of love. So who is that? Those of us in our 40s are like, there's a block. And I'm all out of love. I thought I was all out of love, but I wasn't. I do a lot of, I officiate a lot of weddings. I love doing it. There's a few sentences I often insert into the ceremony that I design for the couple. And I don't think anyone has ever said no to these few lines. I'm going to read them to you. It was first inspired by a couple I worked with who were real, they were students of this Swami Satchidananda. So it says, Swami Satchidananda spoke eloquently about the error we humans often make by confusing love with a business transaction. He taught that true love gives as freely and unconditionally as nature does. Trees bear fruit, plants grow from the soil, rain falls indiscriminately. And no matter what we do to this earth, it continues to supply us with all the food and water we need to live. And this is the true nature of love. It is given freely and spontaneously and asks nothing in return. So nature really is one of the greatest teachers. Especially in this city where people think we kind of feel so detached from nature so much of the time. Mm-hmm. Just last week I Instagrammed a photo of a tree on my block that's just pushing through the pavement and the sidewalk. It's funny how in this city we plant lots of trees and we're trying to stick trees where they were never meant to be in this big slab of concrete we call Manhattan. But nature always kind of wins. It's amazing. A tree, it doesn't shoot out from the ground. It just very slowly grows and it's always growing, whether we notice it or not, and it's pushing through the fucking pavement. It's amazing. I had the picture to show you now, actually. Yeah. Like there was a pretty little, iron little fence around the tree, and it was all made to look nice and contained and neat. Like, we've got the little nature thing here, and you could walk over there. But the tree was like, no, I'm just busting through this shit. So that's what love is like. You bust through anything. Yeah, so when we're talking about love, love can mean many things, right? Love can mean romantic love. There's love we have for friends. There's love we have for a child or a parent or someone we idolize or a general love we have about life sometimes on a good day. Or we love an activity, political party, food. There's all kinds of love. And then, so I guess the question becomes, so how do you Is there some way to distinguish or differentiate between true, bona fide loving kindness and what often passes for love but really isn't? Could be lust. How many times have you thought you were really in love with someone? And then all of a sudden you couldn't even stand the sight of them. Right? Just with the same passion. By the way, the word passion, the roots of the word passion in Latin means to suffer. Did you know that? So we place a lot of emphasis on passion in this world, in this culture. I think the more passionate we are, the better. But what we know about from the Four Noble Truths is the more passionate we are, the more suffering is built into that passion. Which doesn't mean don't be passionate. It just means that's part of the deal. What's that?
They don't call it
the passion. Exactly, that's the passion of Christ. He wasn't having a great day. Far from it. So I'm not going to describe the actual loving kindness practice in too much detail tonight. We're going to actually do it tomorrow. But I will tell you the benefits. So the Buddha... Oh, actually, I'm going to tell you the story about where this even came from. How can I forget that? So how this loving kindness or metta practice even came about is it's a story I love. Now, whether it's a legend or did some version of this happen, who cares, right? Probably something like this happened and it was recorded in the scripture. So the Buddha had all of his monks and nuns go into this forest, I assume probably for the rainy season, where they would have some cover from the elements. And it's all right, all of you go in there, it's going to be a rainy 3 months, so just, this is where you're going to sit and meditate, go over there, and he probably needed some time alone, perhaps, because who knows what he went through. Really, could you imagine? All those rules he made up, with, you know, those ridiculous rules he made up, he was being bugged all the time. So he had them do their thing in the forest. He was sitting, of course, not too far away. But all of a sudden, they started hearing these frightening noises and seeing these strange creatures roaming around the trees or flying around and scaring the bejesus out of them. So they went back to the Buddha and they said, all right, that forest is creepy. It's really scary in there. Get us into another forest. We can't go back there. And he said, you know what? You're going to go back there, but I'm going to arm you. I'm going to give you some tools to work with. And we're going to turn this fear into love and turn it all around. So these little creatures are going to end up being your best friends. So we taught them this practice that we're going to do a lot tomorrow. And sure enough, they went back to the forest. Even though they were still scared at first, and they just did the practice, even though they probably weren't feeling it initially. And over time, the creatures were so taken with the love emanating from these monks and nuns that they started befriending them and bringing them gifts. So this, the frightening noises turned into soothing sounds. What looked scary all of a sudden became beautiful, angelic-looking creatures. So that's how powerful this practice is. Because, I mean, how much of the time do we feel like frightened little monks and nuns in the forest? Right? Because it's a hard world. It's a rough world out there, especially in this city. Really, people can be awful. There's all kinds of things that are very difficult to deal with every single day. So we do close off, we do close up, we do get stingy, we do feel discouraged, we do feel afraid. And it makes us hesitate to let our natural qualities of love come forward or compassion come forward. We can't, going through life that way, it's not a good look. Can't do that. We can do that, but it's not a good, healthy way to live, in my opinion. So these practices don't guarantee that we never feel any kind of pain again or any kind of heartache. Doesn't mean that if we learn to love more naturally and spontaneously or to exercise true compassion, It'll always be appreciated or reciprocated, not necessarily. But we'll learn the true meaning of those qualities without worrying about, well, what do I get out of it? However, the Buddha did say there are benefits to doing these practices. He was very specific. And I love these two. He says, by doing this metta practice, this loving kindness practice, you will sleep easily. You will wake easily. You will have pleasant dreams. People will love you. Devas, which are like celestial beings, metaphorical beings perhaps, and animals will love you. Devas will protect you. External dangers will not harm you, like poisons or fire. Hard. Your face will be radiant. Your mind will be serene. You will die unconfused. And you'll be reborn in happy realms. So, however literally you want to take these or not, I think they are beautiful metaphors. So you'll sleep easily. Like when you have a lot in your mind, you're feeling troubled, it is harder to sleep sometimes. Having Davis protect you, maybe he meant you won't feel so insecure and in danger all the time. It's not a magic incantation that's going to prevent anything from happening to you, but maybe you won't be so worried about things happening to you. So there's all kinds of benefits, I think. So lastly, we often wonder, do these practices actually do anything, right? So we're going to repeat certain phrases tomorrow, focusing on different people in our lives, some of whom we know, some of whom we don't know, and ourselves. And we're going to repeat certain phrases as an exercise of extending loving kindness toward them. So at some times it's going to feel like, well, what the hell is this doing? I'm just thinking about love. I'm saying these phrases over and over again. What's the point? But there is something in the trying. Even, what was that part of the quote? Albert Einstein said, nobody is able to achieve, oh, so he said, our task must be to free ourselves from this prison by widening our circle of compassion to embrace all living creatures and the whole of nature in its beauty. Nobody is able to achieve this completely, but striving for such achievement is, in itself, a part of the liberation and a foundation for inner security. So it's the trying that matters. One of my favorite HBO series was 6 Feet Under. And there was a storyline for a while where a character named Nate, who was maybe in his mid-30s at the time, found out he had a brain tumor, an inoperable brain tumor. It wasn't going to be cured, wasn't going to happen. And his mother, who was a real, you know, almost stereotypical, old-fashioned, doting, real hands-on mother, was always trying to be sweet, maybe trying to do too much, but out of love. She just took him in his arms and said, I'm not going to let anything happen to my baby. I'm not going to let you die. Like, Mom, this is not a fixable situation. You can't, you know, clean this away. You can't fix this the way you fixed everything else in my life. And she got angry with him, but in a loving kind of anger. And she says, don't you know it's the trying that makes people feel loved? It's the trying that's going to make you feel loved. But she was determined just to try, knowing full well she was going to lose her son, most likely. Don't worry so much about results. What's the point? I'm not feeling it. We're trying. We're all trying. I mean, we're all trying all the time.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. For more information about Lawrence Greco, please visit www.openskyzen.com.